You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 26th of January. Why are the players so angry? A theory on that. And can the Jazz be elite defensively again? Plus, a look at tonight's opponent, the Raptors, and a pack Friday. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Ba-dum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, bringing you insight, expertise on the Jazz that nobody else can bring you, with a look behind the scenes, geeky little numbers, all sorts of fun stuff. Thanks for tuning in on a Friday edition. It's going to be a really good show today. It's brought to you by Slow the Flow, SeatGeek, and Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. I love Toronto. I love this city. Love it, love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. Had the great day yesterday. Worked a bunch. I was going to say a buttload and then decided that was inappropriate, so that was a combination word there. And just said it. Worked a bunch, but then walked around. Just a great city. I love, you get this in New York, cities that have a big enough population that every block doesn't have to be a Chipotle. Like, that you have a big enough population so that you're able to have little kind of cute stores here and there, and those city grocery stores. It's a huge city. It's fourth biggest city in North America, and it's got just a great vibe to it, and it feels safe, and it's got space even though it's so big. Love this place. Love it. And that's all right. So let's get into it. Let's start off with some really, really interesting good news if you're a Utah Jazz fan. The question, I was doing the prep last night, and on my sheet that I have, I have a basic prep sheet I do every night before I go to bed, before I dig into kind of the geeky second-level numbers. And so it literally goes like win-loss, record, home way, then offense efficiency, defense efficiency. So I put in our offense efficiency. I was like 106.2, 21st in the league. And I was like, that's exactly what we thought we were going to be this year. I mean, I not for one day did I ever think that we were going to be anything other than 21st in the league offensively. I was like, okay, so we've actually done, despite the injuries, despite Rodney's in and out, despite having the worst five-man starting lineup in the NBA, which Quinn tried to fix, but Rodney's inability to play has meant that it still has to keep playing, is we're still 21st in the league, despite all the problems of, you know, what we thought about Rubio. And I mean, just so really interesting. Like, okay, like, defensively, we're 12th. And I was like, all right, what's going on with that? We're 29th in the league in defensive three-point percentage. We suddenly are forcing a ton of turnovers and not defending the shot as well, and we're fouling more. We're more aggressive. So it was like, I wonder if something's wrong. Like, I went to go look. Honestly, be honest. I was looking to see, like, is something wrong? Do we have, you know, are we in some way, shape, or form not an elite defensive team anymore? The defensive rating this year when Favors and Gobert are on the floor is a 103.2, which is pretty darn good, actually. That's not so bad. The offense when the two of them are on the floor, largely because they're on with Ricky, that combination has just been a disaster. I think we all know that. And so I started digging in. Like, 103.2 is good, by the way, just to try to put some of these weird numbers that I use in perspective for you. If you're looking at a team that's a 103.2 defensively, you would rank, Cleveland is the worst defensive team in the league now, I think. You would rank 103.2 would rank you as the sixth best defense in the NBA, just ahead of the Warriors. Okay, so when Favors and Gobert are on the floor, we're still elite defensively. We just have not been able to score this year. It's bogged us down, and that five-man lineup is really bad. So I went to start digging around and see what I could find. And what I found, I thought, was super encouraging. about where the Jazz stand. So let me walk through this with you again. The defense with Rudy Gobert on the floor as the center without Favors and without Udo. So just with Rudy as your center, you could have Jarebko, Joe Johnson, Tabo, is a 102.4. Oh, it's pretty good. With Udo and no Rudy and no Faves, it's a 103.2. So if you take out, if you were to take out Favors just from this combination and assume that Rudy plays three-fourths of those minutes and Udo plays a quarter of those minutes, you end up with a defensive rating of a 102.6, no matter who's in with them. And that would rank the Jazz third in the NBA behind Boston and San Antonio in a tight cluster with Philadelphia, Toronto, and Oklahoma City. Okay? So that's pretty exciting. Like, so that eliminates Derek from the mix for the purpose of this. And we have just struggled. We have just struggled being able to defend with Derek at the center. This has been kind of a two-year issue. And part of what's happened to Derek is an elite help side defender. I mean, elite. That's why the defense is still really good with Gobert and Favors on the floor together. And I'm a big believer in the secondary rim defender. Like, you look at Golden State, and they have Draymond Green and Kevin Durant on the floor at the same time. So they have two rim defenders, and I think that's actually the answer, is you got to have two rim defenders on the floor at the same time. But what's happened to Faves is because they've spread the floor. When he's at the four, he's so far away now as a secondary rim defender, and you've got to be, frankly, as agile as an incredible as someone like Kevin Durant. Like, the job you're asking, what Favors is so brilliant at, is something that's not being asked by a lot of players anymore. Now you're coming from the three-point line all the way back in to be that help defender. It's awfully hard to do. Now, the Jazz, as I said, are still pretty good with Favors and Gobert, but it's an interesting ask. If you can figure out how to have Derek still, and that's, he's got great instincts, and secondary rim defense is super, and there's reasons why he can still really work, but just separated him out as a center for the sake of this argument. Now, I'm going to total cherry pick here for a second, but I just want to do it because I'm going to do it. So let me also now assume for a second that moving forward with the franchise, that the chances are that next year your center is Rudy Gobert, your backup is Epe Udo, and that Derek Favors and Joe Johnson are not on your roster, right? Like, does that seems like a fair thing? I'm not dismissing Joe's qualities, but I think Joe is playing pretty well. He's revving up. He's getting a little bit better right now. Offensively, he's not at a great stage defensively after playing more minutes than everybody but 21 people in the history of the NBA. And so let's eliminate him and let's assume that Favors ends up somewhere else next year. Maybe not. I mean, I've heard some things that Favors might not have a great market. So who knows? But just for the sake of this discussion. So the numbers with Rudy Gobert defensively without Joe Johnson, without Epe Udo on the floor, and without Derek Favors on the floor is a 96.9. Now, I'm cherry picking here. We're down to smaller minute numbers and some things, but not terribly small. I mean, small. There's a weakness in some of this. In fact, I'll give you the exact numbers, and you're dealing with small sample size theater. And some of this is, frankly, with Tabo on the floor, and so it's not a great indicator of what's happening this year. But so this is with Gobert on the floor and no Udo, no Favors, and no Joe Johnson is 215 minutes. It's not a small sample size, but it's not a huge either. The Jazz defense is a 96.9. That's great. Like, that's not good. That's great. Take Udo with the same thing without Joe Johnson, without Rudy Gobert, without Derek Favors, using the same concept that the Gobert lineup plays three-quarters of the time and the Udo lineup plays a quarter of the time, your defensive rating becomes 98.25 or number one in the NBA. Like, a little stunned by that. I didn't really think that's what I was going to find, by the way. Pretty exciting, though. So, can the Jazz still be elite defensively? I think the answer is abso-darn-lutely. And that, to me, is maybe some of the most exciting news that you have out there, is that you can do that. Rudy and Jonas have been pretty strong together. Their defensive rating is a 95.9. Udo and Jonas is a 103.9. Jonas is not thought of as an elite defender. He plays so hard, though. Derek and Jonas, unfortunately, since December, have been about a 116. So that's, you know, not great. In the month of January, Rudy and Udo with Jonas are both under 100 defensively. Rudy and Jonas are great. They're at like 83.8, but that's largely because of the other night. Jazz had an unbelievable defensive night, their fourth best defensive night all year long against Detroit. So the defense is not great right now. You know, Detroit was their fifth best defensive night of the year. Atlanta was their 27th. Clippers was 25th. They were in the 30s. So they haven't had these, like, elite-level defensive nights in a while that they had in a span. They had them when they were blowing everybody out in the middle of the year. Those were pretty special. And they had them early in the year. If you go back against the Thunder and the Lakers and the Mavericks and the Blazers, the Jazz had four of their top 10 defensive nights in their first eight games of the year. And they had six of their top 15 defensive games in the first 8 games of the year. That's sometimes offenses are slow, but, and frankly, if you kind of go back and look at the day, you know, if you look at, I haven't done this before, I'm just doing it right now. Rudy gets hurt on the 10th of November in our 12th game of the season. We had in our first 12 games for the season, we had 8 of the 12 games, we had one of our top 15 defensive outings. So the defense was elite when Rudy went down. And Rudy wasn't even great in that opening part of the season. Boy, was he great the other night, though. Those two plays are as good as I've seen. I mean, he covered the sun. What incredible plays by Rudy. In fact, that was a lot of the talk around. The two talking points around the team yesterday were Derek Favors' defense on Boban and the Rudy Gobert plays late in the game. Today's show is brought to you in part by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. They've got 1.99% financing still going on, courtesy of Golden West Credit Union. I would tell you the most important thing is that the Hyundai, maybe not something that is on your natural list of cars. Take a day, drive around town, and see how many people are driving different forms of a Hyundai. There's a reason. And the reason is because of the unbelievable value you get for a Hyundai car. Plus, you get the Hyundai Assurance 100,000-mile guarantee. Like, it's stunning the value, the security you get when you buy a Hyundai. Great prices right now across the board. I've driven that Santa Fe. Look forward to doing it again. It is a super, super car with all sorts of safety features and fabulous. I've told you about the Ioniq. We suddenly have more Ioniqs in stock than we did before. I don't know why this has happened. What's happened to our selling? I was trying to sell out the Ioniqs, and I think I failed Blake. He has increased Ioniq stock now. So if you're looking for a hybrid, that is a fabulous car. And you get the Murdoch guarantee, and that's really nice. They do everything they can to make sure you get a super experience. You'll meet Blake and the crew down there. Go down to 4646 South State Street. Say hi to Blake. And through the end of the month, 1.99% financing with Golden West Credit Union. So if you're looking for a car, add Hyundai to the list. You can decide for yourself. I don't want to tell you what to do, but I think you'll be really impressed with what you can get for the dollar value of a Hyundai. 4646 South State Street. I want to go. I want to get to the Raptors. I don't know if we're going to. I want to give you a thought here. I'm trying to figure out why the players are so angry. Why, frankly, Rodney Hood's reaction to the booing was as harsh as it was. I thought the booing was a little out there, but like, also it was a weird sequence of the game. So anyway, I'm trying to figure it out. And I really think that social media is having an enormous impact of the state of the players. Okay, how often do you check your mentions every day? If you're on Twitter, how often do you check your mentions? I went 3 years without checking them at all. I now check them, and they're up. Now I have them. I check them. I'm aware of them all the time. What's happening to every single one of these guys is that they're finishing their games, going to their mentions, and getting told that they're a piece of crap. Universally. Because there's a bunch of yahoos out there that like to tweet at players. It's their right. I think it's pretty classless, but it's their right. They never say it to them in their face, so I generally think you're kind of a loser if you do it, frankly. If you're not willing to say it to your their face, then you shouldn't be saying it in social networking. And if you would never really talk to another person like that, you should never do it in social networking. This is socially or with athletes or with anyone. Okay, so fine. But I was out with some people yesterday who aren't big social network people that are they're involved in the team. And I happened to check my mentions, and there were a bunch of people just ripping Rodney Hood for not playing. And the person says to me, wow, is that what everyone's saying? And I said to the person, I have 55,000 followers. That's what six of them said. And to some extent, it's nobody saying that. If you think I have 55,000 followers and six people commented. But the reaction from this person who doesn't spend a great deal of time on social networking or any, and their comment is that what everyone's saying? That's what it feels like. That's the uniqueness of social networking, is how five people can have a tremendous bit of power. And so if you go and search one of these players' accounts and what the ads are on their account and look at it, it's stunning. And terrible on any of them, whether it's Kevin Durant or Rodney Hood or Donovan Mitchell or whatever, positively or negatively, frankly. And so what's happening, I think, is that these players are coming back from every game and just being told what a piece of crap they are by everyone, or in the case of Donovan right now, being told how great he is all the time. And it impacts them. It has to. It can't not. They're human. They might be world class. They might be one of the 300 greatest players in the world. It doesn't make them not human. And I think it makes someone like Rodney angry when he gets booed because I thought, what was the telling comment about Rodney when he got booed? I've been dealing with this beep forever. Okay, I've never heard him ever get booed. I've really heard him almost never be criticized, but he has been dealing with it. Because every single day on his timeline are a bunch of people telling him he's a piece of crap. Right? Probably not in that nice of words. Every day. It's happening to Durant. It's happening to Draymond. It's happening to everyone. And I think the impact of this is that these players are angry and feel much more like everyone's against them than it's ever been before. And that, to me, is having an impact on how everyone reacts. I don't know. I'd be curious. I'd be curious on what you guys think on this, but I think it's having an enormous impact on the league. I actually right now I'm trying to find out. I was trying to search Rodney Hood and see what I find just randomly. All right. I would love for the Pelicans to land Rodney Hood. Typical Rodney Hood. He's always injured. So 1280 Josh, who evidently may work at 1280 the zone for all I know, has decided that he's going to tweet at Rodney Hood with that. Okay, there's a nice one from Gretchen Young thanking the players for signing afterwards in Detroit. It's great. Whatever is going on with Rodney Hood, I wish him nothing but luck, whether it's regarding an injury or trade. He's been good to us, so that's nice to see. The thing that stands out about Rodney Hood is he's always hurt and brittle. This is on his timeline. There's a bunch of nice things, too. It's not, this is my point, it's not everyone, right? It's 55,007 people said it. But he's reading these, and maybe he doesn't read the comments by, he reads the nice ones, but what do you think stings? We all hear criticism more than anything else. And I think that that is having, you know, I'm using Rodney as an example. Some wackiness going on outside in the street. People with bullhorns, all sorts of crazy stuff here. Oh, no, I think it's someone's car is just really loud. It's Toronto. That stuff's not supposed to be going on in Toronto. I think this is just a case of people. This, you know, it, again, I think it's interesting. And then he's, you know, reading every article about what trade possibilities are out there. I think it's not everyone. That's my point. It's not even the majority of people, but it's the incredible power of very few people to change the mood of things. Bunch of things here. Don't wave your cell phone at Rodney Hood, right? So I think you just have to understand, or I don't know what you, I mean, you don't have to do anything about it. But we won't miss you when you get traded. There it is. So it's interesting, you know, and frankly, what his timeline is right now is every single other team talking about how they want him, fans talking about how they want him, and a bunch of other fans ripping him. So, and there's a bunch of nice stuff. Get well. It's not like our fans are bad people. Like, frankly, that booing became a huge story. But of a crowd of 18,000, what do you think it was? I mean, it's quiet. We just missed a shot. There's no noise. It might be 25 people. Maybe it's 50 people. But the impact that a small amount of people are having on things right now is considerable. Really considerable. Today's show, and so what I'm saying, this was going to be a really bad sequitur, was slow the flow on the insults. No, that's not what I was saying. You can do whatever you want. I just am trying to point out the impact that this is all having. Slow the flow, my friends. It might be the winter, and it might be, you know, you might think to yourself, well, it doesn't really matter, but Utah has been a streaky shooter for the past 20 years. Some splash, some very little. This is a very dry year. We know that. So see what you can do to slow the flow. Become a WER All-Star, a Water Efficiency All-Star. If you shorten your shower time, the numbers don't lie. You've showered just 1 minute less every day. You save 1,875 gallons of water every year. I'm in Canada, so I'm showering forever. No, I'm just kidding. Even better, ultra-low flow showerhead, and you save as much as 2.5 gallons every minute you shower. Slowtheflow.org has all sorts of details for you and other aspects to which can help you out. We live in this beautiful desert, but we've got to really be conscious of water conservation. The ultimate goal is to try to reduce water intake by 25% by 2025. That would be really, really cool. Also, make sure you check out your leaks on frozen pipes and things of that nature, because that can really just change everything. Only run your washing machine when you have a full load. Each load uses 30 gallons of water. These little things make a huge difference. See if you can execute them. Check out slowtheflow.org. Save H2O. Okay, it's time for Pack Friday. Points above average created. If you're new to Pack, the idea is you look at an NBA player. They use X amount of scoring opportunities a night, and then you compare what they do with those compared to the league average. So let's take Kevin Durant, for example. He uses about 20 scoring opportunities a night. He averages 1.26 points per scoring opportunity, which is 0.15 better than league average. On a scoring opportunity, you times that by what an average player would do, and Kevin Durant scores 3.1 points more than the average player in the NBA. That's a lot. That's the fourth best in the NBA. There are only five players above three. There are only 10 players above two. Actually, I take that back. There are only nine players above two in Pack this year. So to be three is mammoth. Now, understanding that there are only nine players that are above two, Steph Curry should be the MVP this year. He's not being talked about as the MVP, but I am now starting the Steph Curry for MVP campaign. Understanding that Steph has played 34 games, but frankly, Harden's played 39. LeBron's played 46, so yes, but like, as if Steph doesn't sit out a bunch more games, Steph's the MVP. Steph's pack is 4.8. Steph Curry is 1.6 points above average more than any other player in the NBA. Not like than the next guy. James Harden is the second best offensive influencer in the NBA at 3.2. So let me make sure we understand how great Steph Curry is right now. There are only there are 15 players in the league that have as positive an impact on the game of 1.6 pack. Steph Curry is that amount better than the next best player in the league offensively right now. So Steph Curry takes 25 scoring opportunities a night. It's actually less. It's 20. He's 4.8 points above league average. James Harden is next at 3.2. This is he's 50% better than the second best player in the league offensively right now. Steph Curry is the MVP of the NBA right now. Anthony Davis is 3.2 also. Steph Curry's offensive impact on the game is 50% higher than the next biggest impactor in the game. Here are the players that are better than 1.6 pack. That 1.6, again, is Steph to James Harden. I don't know if this makes sense. Hopefully it does. Harden is 2, Anthony Davis is 3, Kevin Durant at 3.1 is 4. That's why the Warriors can't lose. LeBron is 5. That's why LeBron's incredible this year, but he's not Steph Curry. Giannis is 6 at 2.7. Karl-Anthony Towns is 8 at 2.6. Clint Capella is 9 at 2.5. Then there's a drop. DeAndre Jordan at 2. Nikolai Mirotic at 1.9. I mean, if he stays this, it'd be an incredible get. Lou Williams at 1.8. Why I would have voted for him for the All-Star team. Steven Adams, 1.8. Enes Kanter, 1.8. Klay Thompson, 1.7. So now there's another Warrior. Kevin Love, 1.6. Victor Oladipo, 1.6. To equal Steph Curry or be better than Steph Curry, you have to take James Harden and one of these other players. James Harden and Kyrie Irving combined in the 45 scoring opportunities they use is not as far above average as Steph Curry is in the 20 he uses. Incredible. Kyrie Irving, Chris Paul, Rudy Gobert, J.J. Redick, Mike Scott, Damian Lillard, Gary Harris, Kyle Korver, DeMarcus Cousins, Jimmy Butler, Jason Tatum, remarkably, Trey Lyles, impressively, Joe Harris, interesting possibility for a trade for someone out of Brooklyn, nice player, 25 minutes a night, shooting 40% from three, Darren Collison, Marvin Williams, Joel Embiid, John Collins, rookie out of Atlanta, impressive, Valanciunas, Kyle Lowry, Omri Caspi, Etuan Moore, Taj Gibson are the only guys 1.0 or more. Actually, so is Greg Monroe. Okay? Steph Curry should be the MVP. Bottom 10 offensive players of this season. Lonzo Ball really has picked it up. He's minus 2.8, but he's gotten better. Gallinari's hardly played. Some guys that don't play much at all. Dennis Smith, minus 2.2. Chris Dunn, minus 2.1. So for all the talk of Chris Dunn. Miami's better without Deion Waiters for a reason, minus 2. De'Aaron Fox, minus 1.9. It's all rookie point guards. It makes what Donovan Mitchell's doing even more impressive. Juwan Evans, minus 1.9. Josh Jackson, another point guard, rookie, 1.9. Marcus Smart. Russell Westbrook, who I'm convinced I would not have put on my All-Star ballot. I swear, I know he gets a triple-double every night, but he's so inefficient. I know, controversy, hot take, yeah, whatever. Avery Bradley, minus 1.8. Mike James, Phoenix, who's not around anymore, minus 1.7. Andrew Wiggins, that's stunning, minus 1.7. Tyler Ulis in Phoenix. John Wall, minus 1.7. Not having a great year in Washington. Frank Ntilikina, minus 1.6. It's just another rookie, that's why I mentioned it. And finishing out with the guys, minus 1.5 for Isaiah so far. Dennis Schroeder, minus 1.5. Ish Smith, that's why the Pistons struggle without Reggie Jackson. All right, let's take a look at the Utah Jazz for the season. We always do that. Then we'll look at the last 10 games. See who's hot, who's not. And then take any questions that have come in. Rudy's your best at 1.4. Joe Ingles at 0.7. Favors at 0.6. Tabo at 0.4. Jonas at 0.4. Howell at 0.2. And Udo at 0.1. Royce O'Neal's hovering around average at negative 0.2. And Alec Burks at negative 0.3. Donovan Mitchell at negative 0.4, though much better as of late. We'll look at his last 10. Rodney Hood's a minus 0.6. Joe Johnson's a minus 0.9, and Ricky Rubio's a minus 1.3. We're 21st in the league offensively. We're not great, but I do feel like if you could start to get rid of the negatives, you'd be able to just get to 15th, and you don't have to be great, but just be above average in everything you do. You'd be above, by definition, you'd be a little bit above average, and then you have an elite defensive team. The pieces are still there, and to be pretty good while Donovan develops, and then when Donovan, if and when Donovan really develops, then you're going. All right, let's look at top 10. I always have not done this until I suddenly hit it. Boom! Steph Curry's number one in the league right now at 6.2 over the last 10 games. That's insane. So is Kevin Durant at 5.3. Kawhi Leonard hasn't played much. I always have to be careful here on who's played and who hasn't. Dame Lillard on fire on his All-Star push. J.J. Redick in four games. Jimmy Butler, 3.3. Karl Anthony Towns there as well. Anthony Davis, DeAndre Jordan. Marvin Williams playing great, hitting 51% of his threes recently. Greg Monroe playing well. Joe Harris, who I mentioned earlier, climbing up the charts. Joe Harris, over the 26 minutes, 53% from three in the last 10 games. Bradley Beal on fire, 2.2. Kelly Oubre playing well. Lou Williams, Dario Saric, Tim Hardaway, Gary Harris, Wesley Matthews, CJ Williams in L.A., Clint Capella, Tyler Johnson, Darren Collison, Kyle O'Quinn, Giannis are all the players that are Chris Paul, 2.0 or better. Who's coldest in the NBA? Aaron Gordon, minus 5.9. Oh, my. Didn't know this was going on. Last 10 games for Aaron Gordon, 34% field goal percentage, 21% from three. That puts a huge question mark on things. Avery Bradley, we saw the other night, is not right, minus 3.8. second worst. Zach Randolph minus 3.2. Tyreek Evans may have run into a brick wall in Memphis. You can trade for him. In the last 10 games, he is a minus 3.3 with 38% field goal percentage, 26% from three. Caris LeVert, Juwan Evans, D'Angelo Russell in his limited time back, Tony Parker, Josh Richardson minus 2.5, J.J. Barea. Norman Powell is really not playing much in Toronto, down to about 13 minutes, minus 2.4. Lance Stevenson minus 2.1. Jaylen Brown minus 2.1, hitting 27% of his threes. Chris Dunn minus 2.1, right on a season average, actually. Kenneth Faried's gotten a little bit of time recently, and it's not been good. Marquise Chris and Dennis Schroeder, Nick Stauskas, and Emmanuel Mudiay wrap out the minus 2.0s. Those are the coldest players in the NBA. That was interesting. A bunch of guys you might draft for. Joe Harris is an interesting name on the trade end of things if you want to look for somebody. Last 10 games for the Utah Jazz. Unfortunately, Tabo Cephalosha is still our best in his four games played. Neto is next at 0.9. The Neto-Rubio discrepancy is significant. It's what they're doing with their possessions. And they use them at about the same rate. Ingles, 0.7. Udo, 0.7. Gobert, 0.6. Royce O'Neal, even. Jonas Jerebko, even. Rodney Hood, even. Over the last seven games. Alec Burks, minus 0.2. So he's fired back. I love that because he's only shooting 18% from three. It's going to the free throw line, 16% of his possessions. Last 10 games, Donovan's negative, minus 0.4, right on his season average, actually, worth keeping an eye on. It's still very good for a rookie. Derek Favors is minus 0.4. Joe Johnson, minus 0.5. He's improving, and Ricky Rubio, minus 1.8. Let's see if any questions came in on PAC. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Oh, dear, I have to go check my mentions, see what people are saying about me. Now you guys are going to light me up all day. I've gotten over it. I get more upset when you say things about people I work with. Pack available to public. I have not gotten there yet. Klay Thompson, what happens when a great player plays with top players? I'm not the biggest believer in teammates' impact on performance. I'm on an island on this. I really kind of believe I can go look at someone's pack rating from past years, and unless they have something really dramatic, it doesn't change a huge amount. That doesn't make a lot of sense to people. But let's look at Klay Thompson, for example. Okay? And there have been some evolutions here. 14-15, Klay Thompson is 2.1 pack. I'm doing this on the fly, so it will not be the most efficient. 15-16 season, Klay Thompson is 2.1 pack. Okay, Draymond Green evolved. Some changes there, but not huge. But still, 2.1 pack. Exact same as he was the next year. 16-17, Kevin Durant joins. Klay Thompson, 1.5 pack. Now, is that just because he used less possessions? His scoring opportunities were per game were 18.5 and 15.6, and 16.17, he was 18.9. They went up. And in this season, Klay Thompson, pack, is 1.7. Pretty close. Scoring opportunities are 16.9, so they're actually down a tiny bit. Pretty close across the board each and every year. I find that is what happens. Kevin Durant is a pretty big teammate change. If anything, it hurt a little bit. Klay Thompson, but not a lot. So, I've always believed this. I'm on an island on it. Which All-Star team should win based on pack? I did not see that. But That's an interesting question. I did the best pack player, so you probably can figure it out. That is Locked On Jazz today. Hope you enjoyed. Hope you had a nice time tuning in. Thanks to our friends at Murdoch Hyundai, at SeatGeek, as well as SlowTheFlow.org.